Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The film Return, written and directed by Portsmouth, Ohio native Liza Johnson, is about a young mother and National Guard reservist who has returned to her family in small-town Ohio after an 18-month overseas deployment. Not long after her return, Kelly, played by Linda Cardellini, starts to fall apart. Her decline begins most obviously when she quits her longtime job at a local warehouse manufacturing business. Kelly literally just walks out on her boss, and he's confused.
What, it can't even wait for me to get off the phone?
I just can't do it.
What can't you do? You can't do inventory or shipping?
What'd I do?
What, did it say something wrong? Suddenly you're the sensitive type?
I didn't say anything.
No, it's not that.
I've kept your job open for a year. You've been working for me for 12 years. I would like to know the reason.
I'm just upset.
That's Kelly's coworker trying to explain in very vague terms the behavior of his longtime coworker. Problem is, he doesn't understand either. Return shows that, among other things, the emotional plight of the returning veteran affects those around them, too. And Return has inspired the latest director's dialogue on art and social change at the Wexner Center for the Arts. I'll be moderating that conversation after a screening of the film tonight. For more information, visit wexarts.org, or you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher page and check out the link there at wsu.org/allsides. Coming up later, we'll hear from an OSU student and Army veteran. We'll also meet the founder of the Women's Veterans Network, and we'll talk with a physician from the Women's Health Clinic at the Columbus VA Medical Center. Joining us right now to talk about the film Return is the writer and director, Liza Johnson. Liza is a native of Portsmouth, Ohio. She's an artist and filmmaker. Her short films and installations have been shown at the Museum of Modern Art, the Walker Arts Center, and the Centre Pompidou, as well as major film festivals in Cannes, Berlin, New York, and Rotterdam. Welcome to the show, Liza.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Question for our listeners. One thing we do know is that no two veterans are alike. They may share certain struggles, but everyone has their own story. So are you a female war veteran? We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and put down your question or comment there if that is preferable. Liza, you were inspired, I read, by a friend of yours who had returned from deployment and struggled to keep his family together. How did that inspiration translate into a story from the point of view of a woman?
I'm not totally sure how to answer that, but I was really so interested when my friend was telling me about his efforts to stay married. I think because actually our military and civilian cultures are pretty separate. And so when he was telling me that story, it was just a very intimate account of like what it was like for him to have been in a kind of extraordinary or intense environment while his wife was in a very everyday, normal American life like they were used to, and about this sort of gap of empathy that he felt opened up between them just simply structurally because of that experience. And I think because I am not from a military family, that was in a way the first time I had heard that kind of intimate account, just of somebody's feelings about this kind of the effects of his deployment and his return experience. And so I guess for two reasons. One, I just thought it was a really important story. And two, I thought it was noteworthy that it didn't feel familiar to me, right? Because it's a very common experience that people come home from overseas right now. And the fact that that story felt so separate from my everyday life, it made me curious and want to know more about it. And I think pretty soon after I started researching, I thought that it would be helpful or interesting, or somehow at least interesting to me personally, because I'm a woman, to imagine that character to be a female soldier. And so through that friend, I met a bunch of female soldiers, and through them, I met more people. And, you know, over the course of writing, I met a number of different people who'd had different experiences after they left active duty. And I guess the first thing that I noticed is exactly as you said, that no two people did have a common experience. You know, people had joined the military for different reasons, had different experiences while they were there, very different experiences of coming home. And so it was really quickly obvious to me that there is no kind of representative female soldier or typical military person or something. And when I saw that, it seemed to me that the most important thing that I could do would be to try to create one fictional person who's like a plausible person, like within the realm of possibility, but who doesn't try to stand in for everyone, you know, and she makes her choices, has her decisions within a certain set of possibilities for her. And I hope that other people of all kinds, veterans and non-veterans, may relate to her, but she's just a character.
My guest is Liza Johnson. She's the writer and director of the film Return. You can learn more about that. Go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. There'll be a screening tonight at the Wexner Center, and I'll be moderating a panel that will include Liza Johnson. So you also decided you made someone plausible, but given our sort of iconic knowledge of war, mm-hmm. You didn't go in that direction. You didn't go into bombs exploding and a lot of melodrama. It was a very internal story.
Yeah, I really felt like for me, for this film, it was important to try to recognize and in a way honor the things that are dramatic about this kind of simple everyday story of trying to come back to your family, you know, where I think a lot of really good films have been made about soldiers coming home, ones that I really, really admire. For example, I think most people agree that Taxi Driver is kind of a great movie. But I felt that Kelly's life is quite dramatic already without her having to turn into a sociopath who shoots Jodie Foster's pimp in the end of the movie or whatever, because I just felt like that the things that happen within her every day are filled with tension and interest and forward-moving questions. And so I didn't feel like this kind of, like, extra sort of bursts of violence or melodrama were necessary to keep the story interesting.
In one of the first scenes after her welcome home party, Kelly, played by Linda Cardellini, mm-hmm. Tries seducing her husband. She's... Mm-hmm. Has been gone for 18 months. He's played by Michael Shannon. Well, he's working on some plumbing in their bathroom, fixing something, and he's a plumber. He tells her that they were told not to pressure their returning partners for intimacy right away. And there wasn't a lot of reference to that, except later on in the film, maybe once or twice. But that whole "they told us," and it gave you this sense of what they learned about what they were supposed to expect, was very shallow and very one-dimensional in terms of their returning spouse. Why did you pop that in there?
Well, I think Michael's... this might seem funny if you know his work, but I actually think he's very funny in that scene and in those roles. And I feel that he uses that to tease her.
Okay.
You know, where right at that moment he's fixing the sink, so he's kind of preoccupied. But I think that, like, as he finishes fixing the sink, he uses that as a way to tease her.
So he wasn't really being serious per se. But was the suggestion there that somebody did talk to him about what to expect or did try to prepare him?
Yeah, we had the impression that he might have gone to some spouse groups and have some knowledge. Like, you know, at least it was my sense that many soldiers do have access to some kind of counseling or sense of expectation about what it can be like for your partner to come home and how to support them.
Crystal from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Crystal.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for calling us.
Oh, you're welcome. I debated on whether or not I wanted to go see this movie. We had gotten an invitation of soldiers, female soldiers, to go see the movie. And the reason why is because it hit so close to home for me. I was also deployed in Iraq, and I was actually in a bomb incident. My vehicle blew up, and I suffered some damage. And I came back home without telling my family I was coming home. And so it startled everybody. But I don't recommend anyone to ever do that. The family has to have a process of getting ready for you to come back home, and you have to go through a process of getting ready to reintegrate yourself back into that family environment. We did have intimacy problems. I had a lot of problems with my children and not connecting with them. I have three kids, all various ages. And I quit my civilian job to come back into the military full time just because I felt a little bit more comfortable with the uniform on, and didn't realize that I was really going through a lot. I mean, a lot of emotional, physical, mental things that still, to me, I don't understand 100%. And I'm still in the military, and I'm getting ready to retire now, but there's still a big part of me that says don't get out, because this is the only thing I've known for 25 years, and I don't know how to distance myself from it, even though I think it's not good anymore for me or my family. And so I'm taking a girlfriend of mine, my best friend, with me tonight to go see this, if I get up the courage to go in to watch it. But I appreciate definitely the movie, and I think it's definitely something that people don't understand. I constantly don't feel like my husband or even my children still understand, and I've been back since 2005, and it's something that continuously stays with you and goes with you. It's not something that you just forget. So I appreciate the movie, and I help and pray to God that I have the courage to be able to watch it and maybe get a little bit more of understanding of what I'm feeling or still going through.
Thank you, Crystal.
Thank you.
And thanks for your service.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Liza Johnson? People like Crystal helped inspire the film?
Absolutely. It was really... people were so generous with me and also with Linda in sharing experiences just like what Crystal just said. And it was really moving for us. And I think Linda would say also really helped her have confidence in the character. She's also never been in the military. And so hearing the experiences of people like Crystal really made her feel more confident in trying to honor those experiences. I guess I would also say, too, that a lot of soldiers, you know, told me that they kind of just don't want to go see fiction films about their own experience, and I guess I just wanted to honor that as well. I think that, you know, Crystal, if tonight's not the night, you can always get it on VOD later or something when it's the right mood for you. And also, I think that or at least it's my hope, that the film can be useful or interesting for people who don't know anything about your experience, you know, because there is a big gap of, and at least for the character, that's part of the problem, right, is that she has an experience, but the people in her world don't know much about it. And so I guess my hope is that it's at least partly for people who don't share your experience, and that, it, you know, maybe... you never know how your film will have effects, but you, at least I would aspire that maybe it could help people to understand or know a little bit more about what that might be like.
My guest is Liza Johnson. She's writer and director of the film Return. Coming up, we're going to meet an OSU student who served in the U.S. Army for 9 years, and we'll also hear from Dr. Amy Saunders of the VA Medical Center in Columbus. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, sugar under the gun. It's making us fat, making us sick. Is it time to regulate sugar? Mark Bittman joins us. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point begins this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 42 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high right around 50. Clear skies tonight, a low of 37 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms moving back into the area for Friday. Another warm day, though, with a high of 66. And showers and thunderstorms likely Friday night, a low of 38.
Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences, which announces a 60-minute production of Shakespeare's Macbeth designed for audiences ages 8 and up at 1 and 4 p.m. Sunday, March 4th at the Lincoln Theater. Theater.osu.edu.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Women account for 1.8 million, or about 8% of U.S. veterans, according to the latest statistics from the Department of Veterans Affairs. Today on All Sides, we're talking about the transition to civilian life for women veterans and some of the unique challenges they face. Still with us is Liza Johnson. She's the writer-director of Return, a film about a female veteran who has returned to her family in small-town Ohio after an 18-month overseas deployment. I'll be moderating a discussion after a screening of Return tonight at the Wexner Center. We'll post a link for more information at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Liza will be on the panel. And welcome back, Liza. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And joining us now is Anna Rice. She's an OSU student who served in the U.S. Army for 9 years. She was the only female machine gun operator in a gun truck platoon in Iraq and did convoy security for hundreds of combat logistic patrols. She is currently a sergeant in an Army Reserves unit out of Milan, Ohio. And I want to welcome you to the show, Anna.
Thank you.
Also joining us now is Dr. Amy Sanders. She's a physician in the Women's Health Clinic at the Columbus VA Medical Center in Columbus. Of course, she is also currently serving as a consultant for the Women Veterans Health Strategic Health Group based in Washington. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Once again, if you're a female veteran and have returned and have a story to tell that you want to share, please give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Liza, before we move on, I want to bring up an issue that you is referred to very fleetingly in the film, but it just makes you yearning to want to know more, and that's about sexual assault and rape in the military. And Kelly, the lead character in the film, a couple different times says, you know, I didn't have it so bad. A lot of people had it worse. And you think she's going to say something about injuries and that sort of thing. But one of the things she does say is, at least I wasn't raped in a porta potty.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, you know, tell us what inspired that and, you know, how you decided that she wasn't necessarily going to be a victim of that, but would refer to it.
She does throughout the movie say she kind of minimizes whatever her own experience was compared to the people who are around her. And that's a kind of a through line that she does again and again, which is frustrating to her friends because her friends all want her to tell the one thing that happened to her, you know, and
something must have happened.
And Kelly's circumstances, things have happened, but she doesn't have like that one thing to tell. She, you know what I mean? There's a whole experience that she had, but there's no kind of acute incident of her own that she feels would satisfy their desire to know that story. So throughout she keeps saying like other people had it a lot worse, and at a certain point when her friends are putting pressure on her, she says a list of things that didn't happen to her, things that she thinks they suspect her of hiding from, you know, like that she says that she didn't have to carry a dead body and that she wasn't raped in a porta potty and something else. And really pointing to acute incidents of, you know, extreme things that she is aware of, but that didn't happen to her. And I think especially because there's relatively few films about female soldiers and because military sexual trauma is a special concern for female soldiers, you know, we thought it was something that she would be aware of and that she would probably at least mention in the movie.
And then the fact is, of course, that women are more likely to be raped by a fellow soldier than killed by enemy fire, and twice as likely to be raped than in the general public. Part of the problem is the fact that she's from a small town on the Ohio River. And Dr. Amy Sanders, how many women's health clinics has the VA opened? And are there enough in the rural areas where a disproportionate number of veterans come from?
Sure. There are a number of VA clinics throughout the country, predominantly in larger cities. However, medical centers, VA medical centers, will have community-based outpatient clinics, or what we call CBOCs, that are focused more in the rural, underserved areas. However, those are spotty, and we can't just geographically cover all the area that's necessary. Some veterans do have to travel a couple of hours to get to their nearest VA clinic, whether it be a full inpatient center or a small satellite clinic. I don't have the exact numbers for how many those are. Your women's clinics will vary between VA medical centers, how they're set up, how they're structured, how well-staffed they are. VA is very different now than it was 5 or 10 years ago with respect to women's health. And as a result, you're seeing more and more women-specific clinics, ideally comprehensive care clinics where women can get all of their needs met in a single one-stop shop clinic. That is fortunately what we have available here in Columbus.
Anna, you were first injured during your first deployment and also diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. At that time when you returned to Columbus, the VA did not have a women's clinic. What was your experience then, Anna?
It was really difficult coming back to kind of an outside perspective of the VA. And while they provided good health care, it was a little intimidating to always be speaking to men and things about things where it's a little more private, a little more emotional, and especially when they're viewing you as a woman and, well, things that you might be articulating through your experiences might be over-emotiated because you are a woman. So it was a little difficult to really be feeling that I was getting the help that I needed or being able to express myself the way that I wanted to. And luckily, over the next couple of years, when my VA here in Columbus did start to develop more programs, For women
mm-hmm.
specifically, I was able to fully transfer myself to the women's clinic there. And it's just a much more friendly atmosphere, especially where you just kind of don't have any walls up when you're trying to articulate to men. Because in my instance, I had been dealing with men for the past 18 months. And a lot of times you have to, you know, kind of put up a tough wall and things. And you can't be girly about, you know, things that you experience. And you really just kind of adapt to being a soldier rather than a female. And so coming back and getting the help at the women's clinic was really good for me. It really helped me progress.
I saw lots of references to the fact that women, much more than men, male soldiers, female soldiers, are misdiagnosed, that the post-traumatic stress disorder is missed in the diagnosis. Why is that? What do we know about that? Amy Sanders?
Well, we know that PTSD is more prevalent in women than male veterans. That also goes for military sexual trauma, depression, things of that nature proportionately. Although there are less women in the military, they are more likely to be diagnosed with those types of illnesses. And I think that, again, kind of going back to the fact that we are more in tune and adept at diagnosing those in women than we were in the past. I think I'm similar to heart disease or things of that nature where it's felt to be a male issue. We're more savvy to the fact that women have been exposed to many of the same experiences, and we know that now women are in combat and serving in those roles where PTSD tends to manifest itself once they return.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the plight of women veterans when they return. If you have a question or comment, have a story to share yourself, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And David in California, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. I'm a real history nut, and every once in a while I run into various descriptions of how the vets were cheated out of their benefits. And going back even to the Civil War, there was a comedy series called the Peck's Bad Boy series talking about the Civil War vets. So in order to help out in this case, I'm wondering, has any research been done to essentially show the propaganda techniques that were used to cheat the various veterans over the span of time? I heard one of your guests a moment ago say that you can't act too girly in there. Well, actually, I think that, you have to be just basically realistic and stating what is real. I sometimes think guys appreciate it when people are are acting real as opposed to overplaying one side or another. You can't act too tough. You can't act too girly. But state your case.
Well, there's a couple issues you're bringing up, David. You want to know to what extent is there efforts being done to protect people's vets' rights to their benefits, right? And is there a concern about that at the VA? I mean, there's been suggestions that people aren't being diagnosed properly because the VA doesn't want to have to take care and be responsible for their illnesses or their ailments. Amy Sanders?
Well, my first thought to that is that it is in VA's best interest to take care of their veterans, their patients, to the best of their abilities in the long run. I mean, even from a cost-effective standpoint, we are trying to put the focus on prevention compared to reactive treatment of diseases and illness. Business sense, a much more savvy business model to do that. So I'm not sure that I would agree with that statement.
Okay, David, thank you very much for your call. Liza Jensen, there is no discernible help at all for returning vets in your film. Even the counselor, when the main character Kelly sees Kelly sees in a group therapy session after getting a DUI, doesn't seem to get her references to the fact that she's a returned veteran. Tell us about that. Is that a small town thing, a small town problem, do you think, or was that of the times?
In the moment that you're talking about, Kelly finds herself in a kind of driver clinic, you know, because she's had a DUI and she has to go to a group therapy in order to get her license back and stuff. And I think in that situation, the problem is that she's in the wrong group, you know, so that it's a session that's modeled like an AA or something like that, where people have a common experience, and that shared knowledge of an experience gives people recognition and helps them change. But the trouble is that she's not an alcoholic, so she's getting empathy, but from not the correct group of people, so they still don't actually understand her experience. Within that group, though, she meets John Slattery's character, who has been in combat before, and her encounter with him ultimately, I think, does become the most interesting point of contact for her in the film, where because they both have some kind of shared experience of fighting, they can give support to each other and honor each other's experience in a way that's hard for them with people who don't share their experience.
And it was some of the most dialogue in the film was between the two of them. She finally opened up and relaxed and talked about it.
And our other guests, I'm sure, have much more actual social policy knowledge about these type of things. But with the people that I met, I will say that they did seem to be very, very helped by being in contact with other people who had a common experience.
So, Anna, when you first returned, did you have that group talk experience?
I didn't, and I think that was one of the things that may have helped because I was a little secluded. I moved back in with my parents and my siblings, and it was kind of a place where I felt by myself and didn't have people to talk to because it was states away from my unit. So I definitely now know that does help because I interact with a lot of veterans on campus. But initially, no, I did not.
Terry in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Yes, and I'd like to know if Liza, the director, will enter any of her this movie return in the GI Film Festival, maybe not this year, but next year when it happens in May in Washington, D.C., or any other film festival. I'd like to know if she will be willing to show the film here in Youngstown.
Okay. Liza Jensen.
Sure, I'd love to. I've actually been to the GI Film Festival. Some friends of mine made a wonderful documentary called Lioness. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's a doc about female engagement team in Fallujah, and I think it's really wonderful. So I went to the GI Film Festival with them once, and I was very impressed by the crowd and the way that it seemed to support service people by showing these films that were related to military topics. So yeah, I'd love to. And sure, we'd love to come to Youngstown. I don't know if that's on our agenda, but right now I do think something in Cleveland is on our agenda.
Thank you, Terry.
Bye.
Take care. Bill in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hey, and thanks for taking my call. I'm also a veteran. I served Iraq two tours, first 05, 06, and then 08, 09. And on my latest deployment, I was injured in IED, and when I get back, I had to deal with the VA and go to surgery and stuff. But my main comment was, I don't like the distinction between female soldiers and the male soldiers. We're all soldiers, and, you know, we should be treated equally. Like when I have to go to VA, 99% of the doctors and nurses and administrators are all female, and I don't have a problem with that. I think we should stop constantly comparing female to male, and it should be all soldiers, and all soldiers should be treated equally.
Amy Sanders, as a physician at the VA clinic, what's your response to that?
Right. Certainly, you know, when we talk about women veterans, we don't mean to kind of disparage male veterans by any means. However, we do know that women in general, veteran or not, have unique needs, concerns, issues, medical specifically. And unfortunately, in the past, VA didn't necessarily address those needs appropriately. And I think that now that we have more female veterans, we have more young female veterans, VA has to respond to their needs. And from a healthcare standpoint, those needs are very real. As a result, we have tried to make women's care a safe environment for women, whereas perhaps their experience in the military may not have been safe. We have to be very cognizant of their kind of psychosocial issues and needs that are very well there for males as well. However, there are differences. There are differences between men and women. Even just the exam itself, a female gynecologic exam is very different than a male routine primary care exam. And as a result, VA has to accommodate for that. So while, yes, all veterans are veterans and they do share similar experiences, men and women themselves have unique differences. VA has to respond to that.
Thank you, Bill, for your call.
Thank you.
When we return, we're going to continue our conversation. But first, I want to say thanks to Liza Johnson, writer and director of the film Return. Thanks for joining us today, Liza. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Liza will be with me tonight at the Wexner, at the Mershon Auditorium for the screening of Return and then a conversation afterward. For more information, go to WOSU.org/allsides. We'll have a link there for you. So when we return, we'll continue. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Receive daily updates from WOSU by liking our station on Facebook or by following WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Visit WOSU.org/email to sign up.
This is 89.7 NPR News. 40 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today, warming up to a high of 50 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 37. Showers and thunderstorms are likely on Friday. Another warm day with a high of 66. Expect some showers and thunderstorms Friday night as well, a low of 38 degrees. And sunshine looking ahead to the weekend. Not quite as warm, a high of 46 degrees on Saturday. And stay with us for more All Sides with Ann Fisher in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of the program begins with a discussion of Ohio primary politics and Super Tuesday. Join us for Hour 2 of All Sides at 11.
Support for 89.7 comes from the McCoy Center, presenting Michelle Norris, March 8th at 7 p.m. The author, journalist, and co-host of NPR's All Things Considered will share personal lessons of her family's racial legacy and race in America. McCoyCenter.org.
Be sure to discover more about All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU.org/AllSides. From the website, you can listen and watch the show live weekdays from 10 until noon. You can also explore the archive, which includes audio and video of every show. That's WOSU.org/AllSides. And All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Women account for 1.8 million, or about 8% of U.S. veterans, according to the latest statistics from the Department of Veterans Affairs. Today on All Sides, we're talking about the transition to civilian life for women veterans and some of the unique challenges they face. Still with us, Anna Rice, an OSU student who served in Iraq with the U.S. Army as a machine gun operator in a gun truck platoon. She is currently a sergeant in an Army Reserves unit. Welcome back, Anna.
Thanks.
And also still with us is Dr. Amy Sanders. She's a physician in the Women's Health Clinic at the Columbus VA Medical Center in Columbus. Thanks again for joining us, Amy.
Thank you.
And also still with us, in case we need her, is Liza Johnson. She's the writer-director of the film Return. Thanks again, Liza.
Thank you.
Joining us now is by phone from North Carolina is Celia Zelwak. She's the founder of the online Woven Women's Veterans Network. In 2011, she was appointed by the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to the Advisory Committee on Minority Veterans. Celia was in the 10th class of women to graduate from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. She served as an Army veteran in the Desert Shield, Desert Storm era from 1990 to 1995. Welcome to the show, Celia.
Thank you so much.
First of all, does this even bear asking, but I must, has the role of women in the Army, in the military, changed much since the early 1990s?
Well, I think it definitely has. When we were serving in the 1990s, obviously Desert Shield, Desert Storm had kicked off. And at that time, women were starting to move into more roles that exposed them to the front lines, particularly logistical support roles. Now, I did not actually deploy to the combat zone. My husband was in the combat zone. However, my responsibility was to bring people back from Iraq. And, you know, in talking to women veterans from that era, I do know that particularly transportation, logistics, those that were in food service fields did provide combat service support and were exposed to various frontline missions and certain things. So I think it has changed because now there's no question about that. The women are in frontline positions. I believe that, you know, as far as being exposed to those, Liza had mentioned the Lioness film, and I think for anybody who's interested in seeing that firsthand, just watch the Lioness film, and you'll see the Lioness teams that went out to provide support. So I think definitely things have changed, and there's more recognition and acknowledgement, although I will tell you that there are some people. When we featured the Lioness film a couple of years ago through Woven Women Veterans Network, that did not come out to see it because I think they're still in denial that women are in those kinds of positions.
You formed Woven Women's Veterans Network in 2007 as an online resource for women veterans of all eras, experiences, and armed services. So what was your motivation for starting Woven, and what did you hope to accomplish at the outset?
Well, my motivation was basically during the time I had been appointed to the VA Advisory Committee on Women Veterans by the VA Secretary. So from 2006 to 2009, I served on that committee, and my awareness started to raise about the needs of women veterans. Obviously, I was a women veteran, but I was not aware because I did not use the VA. When I transitioned back in 1995, I went right into the corporate sector and used civilian health services. I wasn't aware that there were challenges that women vets were facing, and I thought, okay, let me see how many networks are out there providing information to make women aware of their eligibilities, of the fact that if you served in the military, which is the question we really should be asking at all levels, not are you a veteran, because many women do not self-identify, particularly from the World War II through the Vietnam era. But if you've served in the military, is she aware of the fact that she could be eligible for VA benefits, health services, health care, things like that, which is essential For many women who may be struggling in finding employment and different things, I mean, access to health care is a contributor to homelessness. So I wanted to make sure that women vets had a place to go where they had information, although initially my concept was to create an online resource. When I was in Florida, the network was actually a physical presence in Florida, and we had women meeting. We had the VA come down. We had the Department of Labor provide speakers, and we met monthly. And the interesting thing about it is that while I formed the network expecting OEF, OIF veterans to come out, you know, like Anna, it was actually the World War II through the Vietnam era women who came out to our meetings. And what they said was, finally, someone is acknowledging us and our military service. Finally, we're not invisible. And many of the reasons that they wanted to come out to our meetings was reasons that have already been said and stated, was that common experience that Anna had mentioned, the feeling of isolation. I mean, women came out to our meetings that if you looked at them, you would never know they served in the military. And you know, the other thing I think that is key is when I ask them, well, you have the American Legion, you have the VFW, you have wonderful organizations that serve veterans, the veteran service organizations. I said, they've been in existence for a while. And they said, when I go to tell my stories, nobody cares. Nobody asked me about them, and nobody's really interested. So I came here to share my story, and all the women that I met through Woven from those previous eras, many of them were actually encouraged to get out. Some of them had babies back in the 70s and basically were forced out of military service when in some cases many of them wanted to continue to serve. So their stories are very different and very interesting as well. But I think that was my inspiration, was to give us a voice and ensure that that women veterans' needs remain visible.
You mentioned homelessness. The auditing arm of Congress estimated that the ranks of homeless female veterans has risen more than 140% since 2006 to 3,328 in 2010. The Veterans Administration does not track homeless female veterans and their needs, though. And I was wondering, I was going to ask you what you do in terms of homeless vets and how you reach out to them. It probably helps to be online.
I would say that in some cases it does. And in some cases, because, you know, I wear a couple of hats. So I believe I sent you the research study that we did, and I'm a PhD type, so I do research. And one of the things that I've found both at grassroots level through Woven and through my research is when you're working with homeless women veterans, you have to go out to where they're at. So, and the difference, and I think one of the gentlemen that called in, and I've heard this comment so many times, why, you know, veterans are veterans, treat them the same. Well, serving on the Advisory Committee on Minority Veterans, I know for a fact veterans are not the same. Just for the reasons that Dr. Sanders said, I don't know of any men that have been having babies and need maternity care at the VA. So, I mean, our needs are unique. And, you know, with respect to homelessness, the needs are significant. Unlike male vets who you may find under a bridge or perhaps at a shelter, if the woman vet has a child, she's likely moving from couch to couch. And I've interviewed women vets who are homeless, so I know this is to be the truth, that they're likely living either with their parents, with friends, with perhaps companions, and they're moving from couch to couch. And I do believe the regulations on homelessness have been changed to acknowledge that form of homelessness as well. So you have to go out there and you have to find them, you have to meet them, talk to them, and it's word of mouth as well. So I think the online network has its value, but you still have to combine that with grassroots outreach.
Amy Sanders, how does the homelessness issue affect what you try to do at the clinic?
Yeah, well, one point I wanted to make is that we have screenings that we do on any veteran who comes through the VA as a patient. And they encounter these questions no matter if they're coming for an eye exam or a primary care follow-up appointment. And one of those now is homelessness. It's what is your current living situation, as a way to capture our current population and get an understanding what is their living situation, how can we help if there are concerns of homelessness, things of that nature. And we've been able to identify, even in the women's clinic, women in the cases that were just mentioned, living on the couch with their child and moving from house to house, friend to friend. So that has been a way to increase our awareness of that. I'm sorry, go back to your question.
Oh, that just increasing the awareness of it, just
sure.
knowing
sure.
And taking stock of that is helping you, I guess.
Absolutely.
You know, Liza Johnson, I wanted to ask you, there is a feeling in the film Return that she's slipping away to that. She's starting to see that outlier looking, that outlier role being outside of the mainstream. And was that a feeling you were trying to evoke, or is that just something I got out of the movie, that she's slipping away and no one's there to grab her?
I think a lot of people have that feeling right now. It may include veterans and also not people who aren't veterans at all, but it's in many times and places right now, a very tentative and precarious time. And I think a lot of people feel like they could be slipping into circumstances that they hadn't hoped for.
And, of course, the film is set in a small town. You're from Portsmouth. Mm-hmm. It looks a lot like Portsmouth. It's not actually filmed there. But the small town issue, her environment is not an encouraging place to see either.
I think that's right. I mean, I think it can be. Like, her friends are very warm and they do fun stuff. But I think that many people told me that after they've been in a very intense environment with a focused sense of purpose, some of the fun things of their everyday life, at least for a period, don't remain meaningful. You know, so like people have told me that they used to really like football and then they didn't. Or in her case, she has trouble reengaging with her daughter's cheerleading, which, if you're really into it, is, I must say, it can be very fun.
Yeah.
And people get really into it.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've observed that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's also not that hard. I mean, I don't think it makes her crazy for a moment not actually be able to understand why that is important, you know. And I think that she has to reassess, like, what is going to be important for her. And how does that relate to what she's coming from? Where is that sense of purpose? And how can she stay in a world instead of slipping away?
Anna Rice, you suffered from PTSD when you returned. You had some injuries that you had to deal with as well. They aren't why you were sent back, but why you came back. But what about that PTSD? What about that slipping away feeling? Is it something you were feeling?
Yeah, definitely. It's a really different feeling to be in your own body and not really recognize yourself and what's around you, especially when you're dropped into a year's worth of something that's totally foreign and then plucked right out and placed right back where you came from, and nothing is the same. I was on the road a lot, so driving was even hard for me. You see trash on the road and you're wondering if it's going to blow up, and then you're like, oh, that's really silly. And you know, a lot of panic attacks and things like that and crowds, and you just are wondering how you're ever going to reacculturate yourself to this life that, you know, you've just been missing for the last year that just went on without you. And a lot of it is just really seeking out. A lot of times, I think a lot of the people that don't get the help, you know, you can't expect it to come to you, and reaching out is the best thing that you can do for yourself. Because there are programs out there, obviously, especially at the VA and different veterans organizations like Woven that you can go to. But just really having to re-identify as a person and who you are, because those things really change you. And the assimilation and transition is just probably the most difficult thing, and dealing with an injury and, you know, being, you know, I'm very lucky that my injury wasn't, you know, paralyzing or anything like that, but it's still something that you kind of come back to that on a daily basis, and the things that you experienced. And like our Crystal had said, it never escapes you. So
it never goes away. Rick in Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'd heard the veteran who had spoken earlier about her anxiety about going to the movie. And I was just hoping that she could find the same courage that she showed overseas and get to that movie and take care of herself. It might help with her dealing with the family that doesn't understand the problem. And it's the same courage that she showed in supporting a team that she worked with. And she's, okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, Rick, thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And isn't it the case also, I think that a lot of support organizations are going to be at the event tonight. Do you know?
Yes. There's been all mm-hmm. the community has been invited, mm-hmm. I know. So, yes.
So I think if you were looking to, you know, for a community or for organizations that can help you, I think they would actually actively be there.
And yeah. a lot of other people looking yeah. for maybe some answers.
I know the our VA Women's Clinic will have a presence there tonight for women who have questions or even just to get their foot in the door as
You'll
to what
there.
Services we offer. I will be there actually with my mother watching the movie, but our Women Veterans Program Manager as well as one of our social workers who are involved with women's care in our clinic will be there tonight.
And Anna Rice, you'll be there.
I will be there with another female veteran.
Are you concerned about seeing the film at all?
I'm not. I'm very interested. It sounds really great. And I, you know, watched the trailer on the website. I've tried to watch different films too, and a lot of them are a little goofy. So, and the way that this sounds, it sounds very real because coming back isn't always going to be a huge drama. And I never had to deal with coming back to a family or kids. So it's different, but I'm sure it'll be very relatable for any returning veteran, especially female veterans.
Well, Anna Rice, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Anna Rice is an OSU student, served in the U.S. Army for 9 years, currently a sergeant in an Army Reserve unit in Ohio. Also, Dr. Amy Sanders, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Amy Sanders is a physician in the Women's Health Clinic at the Columbus VA Medical Center in Columbus. Celia Zelwak, founder of Woven Women's Veteran Network. Celia, thanks for joining the program today.
Thank you so much.
And Liza Johnson, writer and director of the film Return. Once again, Liza, see you later tonight, and thanks for coming today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.